Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, yesterday our bad martini dealt with Hillary Clinton and her indignation towards Senator Ron Johnson after he demanded to know why the administration kept going with a false narrative after the fact that Benghazi was a terrorist attack was pretty clear pretty quick. She says, ultimately, what difference does it make? So we've got a couple of more martinis related to Hillary's testimony today, one of which is the good martini. There weren't that many lawmakers on the Republican side really willing to fire away pretty heartily at Hillary Clinton. Most asked decent questions, but treated her with kid gloves in a lot of respects. One of those people was not Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul, who pretty much, as usual, made it clear exactly what he thinks.
I'm glad that you're accepting responsibility. I think that ultimately with your leaving, you accept the culpability for the worst tragedy since 9/11. And I really mean that. Had I been president at the time and I found that you did not read the cables from Benghazi, you did not read the cables from Ambassador Stevens, I would have relieved you of your post. I think it's inexcusable.
And then he went on to talk about cables that he would understand if she missed. And he was basically talking about wasteful State Department spending all over the place, including $80 million spent on a consulate in Mazar-i-Sharif, Afghanistan, that will never actually open. Jim, a lot of people with some pointed questions yesterday, none as clear and as direct as Rand Paul.
I think this is Rand Paul really making a strong play as the voice of the opposition. More than a few Republicans have kind of grumbled about whatever you think of John Boehner and Mitch McConnell as a strategist or as managing their respective members of their party in each chamber. They're just not the finest communicators the party has to offer. I don't think that's an unfair assessment. The question is, who is? Who is going to be the guy who is our Jay Carney, who goes out there and gives that message? Rand Paul made a very strong pitch for him being that figure in the Republican Party by giving perhaps the most direct and you know, blunt assessment to Hillary Clinton and to her face. Also kind of worth noting in there, I mean, kind of the excuse from Hillary is, look, I'm Secretary of State. I don't go over every single cable that comes in from everywhere, et cetera, et cetera. There's one of two things here. The first is these cables coming back are the security situation is deteriorating. We are in danger. Stevens himself making clear he believes that he is a target and they're going, you know, basically the message is they're going to try to kill us. And this doesn't rise up to the attention of the Secretary of State. Now, I realize she was racking up a million miles and frequent flyer miles of traveling all around the world and busy with other stuff. But if we are in danger and they're going to try to kill us, it doesn't rise to the level of, hey, this should be red flag. This should get more further attention. This is priority. Then it means every message from every corner of the country has this kind of message, and it doesn't stand out, in which case our diplomatic personnel are under more threats and in more danger than we've ever been told by this administration, or they just didn't, you know, treat it with the seriousness that it deserved, and that's much more likely scenario here. And so, you know, gee whiz, Secretary Hillary, why are you not mad that nobody called this to your attention beforehand? Her carefully calibrated outrage that you talked about and her, righteous indignation in response to Ron Johnson basically asking why they had the wrong explanation for 5 days and kept going on about the YouTube video indicates that she's a lot madder at Republicans for criticizing her than she is for her staff for allegedly failing to tell her anything about this dangerous situation developing in Benghazi.
Well, it was unfortunately, as we turn to our bad martini here, Hillary's day, unfortunately. I mean, you pointed out in the jolt, how many things did we actually learn yesterday about this attack? There were pointed questions from time to time, but Hillary Clinton essentially skated around them, and now that she's headed out of office, probably won't have to answer them much anymore. Here's a couple of clips from her, what I consider less than stellar performance, but it's her way of getting away with bearing much responsibility, even though she claimed responsibility during her opening statement. Here's, first of all, her non-role on talking points.
I wasn't involved in the talking points process. As I understand it, as I've been told, it was a typical interagency process where staff, including from the State Department, all participated to try to come up with whatever was going to be made publicly available.
And then Joe Wilson, congressman from South Carolina, asked a pretty simple question. Why weren't you on the Sunday shows?
Why weren't you the person to appear on the Sunday shows immediately following the attack? Ambassador Susan Rice said that you declined. Was that correct?
Well, I have to confess here in public, going on the Sunday shows is not my favorite thing to do. There are other things I'd prefer to do on Sunday mornings. And I haven't been on a Sunday show in way over a year. So it just isn't something that I normally jump to do.
Jim, first ambassador killed in over 30 years. I just really don't like doing
it. Yeah, this was not, you know, why aren't you chatting with David Gregory more often? Or, gee, you know, you don't sit down and have tea with Bob Schaefer often enough. No, this was, look, this was, you know, just a few days after the attack. And by golly, somebody had to go out and provide information. And a lot of folks have, from the very beginning, have said, well, why Susan Rice? She's working over at the UN. It's not, you know, her field of expertise would presumably be kind of a little bit different from what's going on over at in Foggy Bottom and the State Department as a whole. It's said to me by Bing West, a contributor on military affairs to National Review. He said, look, he is asserting this. So if somebody who's more in the intel community knows more than I do, they can, you know, correct me on this. But people who work for us in the United Nations do not have the highest level of clearance for classified information. That Susan Rice was put out there, an even more exceptionally curious choice to be the spokesperson for the administration. Hillary's observation here, I have so many other things that are more important to do. What was kind of amazing was, and I talked earlier about her, what difference does it make statement. Hillary doesn't really understand why this is a big deal. And they kind of chalk it up to this, interagency, things got messed up. We did the best, somehow they keep insisting we went to with the best intelligence available. And it happened to be 180 degrees, wrong from the facts, but it also was 180 degrees wrong from what struck most people as common sense. It was September 11th. They used mortars. Nothing about this screamed, hey, a whole bunch of people got together to protest a YouTube video, and then they decided things got even more heated, and they decided to go kill an ambassador. There was always a whiff coming off of that explanation, and it was interesting as it only took about a week later. People from the State Department come out and say, yeah, actually, it really does. It was classified as terrorism. Now, the only way this makes sense is if you look back and you realize, oh, this was right after Democrats had gotten together in Charlotte. The president had given his convention speech, and the whole theme was we have al-Qaeda on the run. And Benghazi was phenomenally embarrassing. It basically rebuked a major argument that they were heading to the re-election. Thus, they needed an alternate explanation. And that's what we believe, have always thought was going on here. And we're trying to hold them accountable. We're trying to call them out on this. And basically, the counter argument from Hillary Clinton was, what difference does it make if we lied or told the truth? It doesn't really matter now. And what's kind of, that's a depressingly cynical statement. And depressingly cynical is the reaction of most corners of the press. Couple exceptions, Eric Wimple at the Washington Post, Cheryl Atkinson over at CBS. But by and large, a lot of people, what a good line. Ooh, she really stuck it to them. When basically she's saying, I lied, it doesn't matter now. Astounding to think that people look at this and say, oh, yes, please. I can't wait for her to get into the Oval Office and be our next president of the United States. As far as bad martinis go, Greg, this is a spectacularly bad one.
It absolutely is. So we need to end on a fun, lighthearted, crazy martini. And that's exactly what we have today. As fans of the Washington Nationals know, I believe it's in the middle of the fourth inning, there's the president's race. It's the people with huge heads of former presidents on them, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, and Teddy Roosevelt. The big thing at the end of last season was that Teddy finally won the president's race, and quite frankly, I think that jinxed the Nationals in the first round of the playoffs, but that can't be confirmed. Now the Nationals are announcing this weekend that there will be a fifth president added to the race. A lot of speculation on who that might be. Jim, I just have a feeling it's Chester Arthur's time.
Perhaps. I too am a huge fan of the key plot point he provided in the third Die Hard movie. By the way, it's Die Hard week at 3 March.
It is.
Listeners have noticed. I see this, and my first thought is, well, it's definitely going to be Obama. And I can hear everyone groaning now, and a lot of people saying, no, they couldn't do that. Speculation would be polarizing. But look, Greg, he wins everything else. he's won the presidency so why shouldn't he? Why shouldn't he win the fifth head of the giant head of the Nationals? You can insert a joke here that none of the giant heads would have ears large enough to represent the president, et cetera, et cetera. But the more significant thing is that once he becomes the fifth president in these races featuring the four presidents up on Mount Rushmore, this will add great momentum to the argument that Barack Obama belongs on Mount Rushmore, and you will start hearing a push that because of his immense greatness, he should be up there next to Washington and Lincoln and Jefferson and Teddy Roosevelt. A couple other folks speculating, you know, maybe it'll be FDR, Woodrow Wilson, and all that kind of stuff. I think the Nationals franchise is kind of playing with fire here. I think, you know, I can't imagine, you either have to go with the least known president of all, go with a Millard Fillmore, something that there isn't really intense, strong, you know, some historians will be breaking into fist fights in the stands. But other than that, most American, you know, fans will kind of shrug at it. Or you go modern and, you know, I mean, as much as I love Reagan, I don't know if I want to see a giant Reagan running around, you know. But if Obama gets picked, you realize, of course, then he'll end up being sort of like the inverse Teddy Roosevelt. He will end up, you know, winning through a bizarre course turn of events by demonizing the other four, running attack ads on the other four, you know, George Washington, war criminal, you know, Teddy Roosevelt, you know, ruthless hunter of endangered species, you know, all of that. And he'll end up winning every time through bizarre twists of fate. He'll be the inverse Teddy, and, you know, the fans will be expected to cheer him every time. It's one of the most bizarre things I've heard in a while. It's a perfect choice for our crazy martini. And we will see Saturday which president gets that honor.
Yeah, I'm gonna say it's not going to be Obama. I could be wrong. I'm thinking maybe Eisenhower, maybe Kennedy. I think that's about as recent as you'd want to get. I think FDR is pretty likely. You know, I just love to see George W. Bush sprinting out of the bullpen in person and actually defeat all of them one day, because he's about the only former president who could actually probably do that. So
you realize what this is leading to, of course, is actually having 44 different giant heads. Well, I guess 43, because they count
Grover Cleveland.
They count Grover Cleveland twice. But maybe he gets two heads. You know, maybe he's kind of like the Wonder Twin powers activate and he gets run or something. So they had something really wonderful with four presidents, and you get the feeling they're about to take a really bizarre twist. Either that, or maybe we'll end up with, if you're going to go with presidents and depictions of them, for some reason, Greg, I am now thinking of Point Break, in which all of the more recent presidents rob a bank. You know, the bank robbers wear presidents, and they imitate Nixon and Reagan in the process of doing so. So maybe it'll be kind of like that. We'll see. There's so many ways that this can go wrong. We'll have to see who they pick and you know, what the fan reaction is.
They should have left well enough alone. It could be fun, though. Jim, have a great day.
Looking forward. See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.